WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk, brought to you live from Broadcast House here at 95.9. WATD, my name is Kevin Tachi, as the intro indicated. Yes, I am guilty for the next 2 hours. You can convict me if you like, or you can just tune in and check out some of the conversation that we have prepared for you. First hour is
Are we prepared? I don't know if we're prepared.
I heard.
I see you are prepared.
Well, I knew I was on with you, so I brought notes.
Now, the bickering Hendersons that you hear here, the Bickersons, it's actually returning to the crime of the scene from last week, is State Representative, and I finally call her my co-host, because she's doing more and more stints here. Even when I got to call her in, like, 2 hours before showtime, like, Rep, you got to get in here. She's like, wait, who is this? So we get State Representative representing the 12th Plymouth District, Kathy Lenatra. Round of applause.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And not to be forgotten. Oh, were you going to say something?
No, but you can introduce our next guest.
And what's interesting is knowing that, like, every time, I would say the past 2 or 3 weeks, when I've had a group of representatives in here, somehow your name sneaks into the conversation, like, ah, Representative Muratori's tuned in. They're like going, damn, I gotta invite him into one of these little group sessions.
Hint, hint.
One of these group sessions. So I said to him, and I'm not fibbing, I said, listen, who would you like to have join you? And he didn't hesitate. He's like, Kathy Lenatra. Like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
This is kind of the dream team right here.
You know, and I think it's, you know, because we represent the same community, I think that helps. But, you know, we're of a certain age group together, somewhat. I'm a little bit older, but you're close to my age.
I'm a little close, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and we both have a large family.
We both do.
And we both love the job, so we really kind of get along well. And there's a lot of things that we do because we do for the people, and that's what it's all about. Some people don't get it like that. It's more about egos, but I think for us, it's about helping the people, and that's what we do, and we do it well.
So we're renaming this segment from the State House Report to the For the People Report.
Oh, I like that.
I like that, too.
Yeah, I like that.
Actually, I've actually offered to help. I believe that the two of you are contemplating a podcast.
Yeah, we were just talking about that last week.
About it.
You know, I have a show, as you know, Kevin, State Matters.
You both have shows.
Yeah, Kathy does one as well. And I actually started mine in 2010 when I became a selectman.
Wow.
So I'm actually coming up on my 100th show.
It's a heck of a show.
Yeah, thanks. And but, you know, it's I think it's run its course somewhat. And I was kind of half joking to Kathy about, you know, we should probably do a podcast together. You know, because I think podcasts are the things that are really in more so now. And I think it'd be interesting to kind of do that. We could probably do so many different segments.
I'm going to use two names. Mm. You tell me what they have in common. Madonna. Lady Gaga. What do they have in common?
They're both musicians.
They're strong women.
Okay.
Strong women. Oh, I like
They're
that.
They're always good. Reinventing themselves.
Reinventing, yeah. Oh. Right, exactly, yeah.
Reinventing themselves.
Right, yeah.
And there's always a different look, and there's always something different. You know, if you look at Lady Gaga from 2021, she is nowhere near
right.
the same Lady Gaga sure. from 2018.
Well, look at Billie Eilish from 3 years ago to now.
Oh, I
same
know.
Thing. Yeah.
Amazing.
Short time span, but we'll go
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, it's true. And that's why
she was just hosting
yeah.
SNL.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I saw
well,
that.
No, she wasn't hosting, but she was the musical guest.
And hosting, too.
And hosting,
she hosted,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, she did. She was
yeah.
actually in there. She was
yeah.
acting.
Yeah.
I think that's what you called it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. But yeah, the reinventing and doing a podcast may be something of interest to people.
Just retool.
Yeah, yeah.
I like, and your show isn't necessarily just for folks in the Plymouth area.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
And the name of your show also represents
Profiles. The after?
Which, again, that has longevity, that has legs, and that's something that's beyond. Yeah, you could start out.
Have you been on her show?
No.
No, me either.
But I'm...
I just started. I've only had four shows.
Curious.
Four shows. But again, you both have shows that are relevant, that serve more than just the small, just beyond your constituencies.
Mm. Senator Moran just started a new show, too, and I was her first guest.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something to that, and we'll find out what that is in just a moment when we'll sit down and we'll chat with State Representative Matt Muratori and Kathy Lenatra just in a moment. But right now, time to give you one final peek at what's happening out on the roadways. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
People used to say Brennan's Smoke Shop was Plymouth Center's best-kept secret. Why anyone would want to keep us a secret, I have no idea. Maybe it's because we've been selling pipes and bongs for 30 years. Wow, things have changed quite a bit. I like to think, however, how things have stayed the same. Brennan's Smoke Shop, for instance, still selling pipes and bongs, tobacco and tobacco accessories. The only thing that has changed over here are the people. So many people over the years that have made our small business what it is today. This happy holiday is for you and all the people that work in small business across the country. Thank you for making the holidays great. Without you, this time of year would be nothing but a cardboard box. Happy holidays to all the people that make the holidays smashing. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, just before we get into the meat and potatoes of the conversation here this evening, we'll finish teasing the rest of the show. So Representative Muratori and Lenatra are actually going to be here for not one, but two. You buy one, you get the second one for free. They will be here for the radio program for the first hour. Something I'm experimenting with, you know, giving more to the listeners. And how do you do that? Well, you invite more legislators in.
More politicians. That's what they really want.
Yeah, that's what they want. Second hour, we'll start with Alex Bezance, and we've had Alex in here for a couple of different reasons in the past, where he was the past chair of the Plymouth County Democratic League. Mm-hmm. He is no longer serving in that capacity. He is, however, elected as an official Abington selectman. He asked me, he's like, hey, can I got something I want to share with the listeners on the South Shore that I think they might be interested in. And I'm like, sure, come on in. So he'll be in, stopping in with a little surprise, a special announcement, so we stay tuned for that at 7. And then 7:30, I call him. He's one of the attorneys that we have on a regular basis, local attorney Adam Bont. And Adam is a little bit upset. He had called me a couple of weeks ago to tell me about an incident he had with Amazon when he was looking to buy a new phone during Black Friday. And he was looking not to pay for it with a credit card, but with his bank account. And going through a third-party company, because of where he's located, they denied him because of his zip code. He'll get deeper into this.
Interesting.
And this is something that he actually
Amazon denied?
Stay tuned at 7:30, because let me tell you, he's going to come in here and he's just going to lay it all out.
Ooh, interesting.
And again, a lot of people use Amazon, but Amazon is using this third-party company that's actually located. They're actually I think they originate out of Canada. So we'll talk about that. So, but this particular segment I'm looking forward to because again, there's so much for us, so much ground for us to cover. Knowing that the governor today, first time he has done a talk, or he's done a press conference that has had wide press coverage, and talk a little bit about testing kits. Does it, either you find this interesting that the states are mobilizing, saying, "Hey, we're not going to tell you what to do. We're not going to do mask mandates." What's your thoughts, Rep. Muniotori?
Well, yeah, I think it's the right move actually, because it's all about getting the vaccination and the booster. If you see what's happening now, half the hospitalizations right now in Massachusetts are all from people who aren't vaccinated. The ones that are vaccinated that are in the hospital, I haven't got the booster yet, but they're not as sick either. So the real sick ones are the ones that aren't vaccinated. And I keep telling people I know, I'm in healthcare, so a virus has to go somewhere. So if you're fully vaccinated, you have the booster, it's not going to go in you, but it's going to go to somebody. And that's why you're seeing a lot more children getting it now, because children, we didn't start vaccinating until very late. So,
yeah, that's true. And you're really not truly vaccinated until you get that booster, they're saying. Right. So with the new one, Omicron? Am I saying that correctly?
Omicron.
You need the booster to actually pump up your immunity to about 97%, but without it, I believe it's 70%. Mm.
But they're already priming the pump. Dr. Fauci's already saying, "Oh, we might have to come up with another one."
Yeah.
It's no doubt.
It'd be like the flu shot. You get the flu shot every year. You know, it's going to be something similar. You're going to be able to take the flu shot, take the booster shot for COVID. It's going to happen.
Kind of something that's with us for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. Unfortunately, I think so.
Yeah.
Do you like the idea though of distributing it, that there's some 2 million kits that the state has purchased and the communities that are having, example, I'm sure there are a couple of communities on the South Shore here that have seen an uptick, a large
there
uptick,
is, yes.
And so why not have these fast and easy test kits to distribute within those communities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be your community.
It's interesting that a few weeks ago you couldn't find a kit anywhere, any CVS anywhere, and now we have all these kits. But a couple in my community, Plimpton and Middleborough, will benefit from that. The kits. They'll have a few kits. There was a criteria to make. It was 102 cities that received them, and there was a requirement. So it was a percentage of people that made underneath the poverty level, or don't quote me on that, but it was something to do with that. So those cities and towns received.
Certain median income?
Yes, and those cities and towns received the kits.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Any melancholy to seeing the governor? Now we know that he's only around for another year, especially you, Matt. I mean, give your thoughts on the governor deciding to seek a third.
I don't think it was so much a surprise to me. I'm with the governor, somewhat, at least on a monthly basis. We have meetings on a monthly basis as a caucus. And, we've had discussions about this in the past. And I was actually with him the night before down on Cape Cod for an event for Tim Whalen, who's running for sheriff. And it was Lieutenant Governor and the Governor there, which is kind of unusual to have both there.
It is unusual.
But, it came out of it, there was a strong hint that he wasn't going to run. I think the surprise was, though, that the Lieutenant Governor wasn't going to run as well. The money that she has a lot more money than the Governor has. She's been raising money for quite some time now.
Sure.
So the speculation was that she'd be running as well. But I think the decision was solid as to why not. Look at what we're still dealing with. We're still talking about COVID. And we are dealing with COVID, and now we have the ARPA money, and there's so much more things that had to be accomplished. And, usually what happens in the last year of a governorship is there's a lot of politics that happen, and it gets in the way of the work that needs to be done. And boy, we need a lot of work done still.
Yeah, a lot of finger pointing.
Yeah, yeah.
What you didn't do right, what I would have done.
Exactly.
It's kind of par for the course.
Yeah. Now, and this is unusual too, because we really haven't had an open seat like this in recent memory.
Sure.
So it's really wide open on both sides.
Well, you had both it. Well, sides. It's how the governor came to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deval Patrick decided he wasn't going to seek a third term.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it was Martha Coakley. Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, Martha and Charlie were the two last standing, and went toe to toe.
Yeah, but it's the first time you haven't had somebody like a. You usually have like a lieutenant governor that may step up and go into that, but you don't have it on the Republican side at all.
Sure, yeah, like Kerry Healy back in the
day. Yeah, there was always somebody that was coming at Salucci, and you know, it's just
have
not
we
happening.
Ever had a 3-term governor in your recollection? I was thinking about that the other day.
There must have been, but probably
not
well
in
before.
Our time.
Yeah, probably well before. Yeah. Yeah, that's something we can ask of the listeners if they know. Somebody knows, they can call in and give us
Or they can text you, saying you are you are the social media savvy
representative. He is very savvy on social media, yes.
I might hire him to be my PR guy. He's so good.
Yeah, I'll fit into my schedule.
He really is. You are. You're fantastic. Hey, let's not forget, I mean, I think not too long ago, you won the Legislator of the Year via Mass Access because of your prowess with getting out the word to the folks
yeah
in the
that
Commonwealth.
Was what was that it was probably about 4 years ago I think and at that point
2019?
I was maybe
2018 2019
yeah 2018 I think it was and at that point I was doing 35 texts a day I'm sorry tweets
a day.
Yeah. Tweets and retweets in a day on average over 8 years. Yeah,
I got to step up my game. I'm slacking here.
I didn't know that until they mentioned that, but that was cool.
Yeah, they had all kinds of data on them.
Really
cool. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Well, you know, because of COVID, you know, there have been mechanisms that have been put, financial mechanisms that have been put in place, not only by the state, but also by the federal government, of course, the American Rescue Plan Act, fondly known as the acronym ARPA, has been, I believe, discussed and mulled over by the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
Has this cruised out of the conference committee?
It did, and then went to the governor about 10 days ago, actually.
Yeah.
And the conference committee, what they did was they actually decided to put everything from both sides of the House and the Senate, everything together, and which I don't think was a surprise. I think we kind of knew that would happen. I know I had some things to put in there. Kathy had some things to put in there. Senator Moran did as well. So we kind of always shared the wealth. So a lot of people in Plymouth, a lot of organizations in Plymouth could get some of that money that's needed for a lot of these organizations. So I think we kind of knew that would happen. The question was, you know, what would the governor do when he got it?
Yeah.
And he has signed it as of this afternoon. I think Christine James reported on that earlier. And I think there was only maybe a couple things that were vetoed, but for the most part, everything went through.
How does that feel? How does it feel, though, that this money will, well, it's not going to be something super immediate, right? That this is going to be?
Well, it should be. It should be, yeah. And that was one of the things that the governor vetoed in there. And this will be interesting to see what happens. Is in there was a 28-panel board, 28-people panel that was going to actually oversee the money and the distribution, all that with, you know, that kind of delays it all as well. By the time you pick these people, you know, you're into months, you know, into this and then trying to get it out. So I think if we could just get it out now that we know it, I mean, you know, looking at this, you know, we're looking at, you know, money for housing, money for healthcare, money for workforce development, economic development, infrastructure, education. And we're talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars under each of these categories. Now's the time to get it out. I think if you look at the country, probably more than half the states have the ARPA money already out. It's been out. I think we took in Massachusetts a little different road, which I think I agreed with. Initially, they didn't, but I did. Let's all take a look at it. Let's hear from people, you know, where the needs really are. And then now it's time to get it out, though.
Now it is time to get out. I was really thankful that $100 million went into the VOTEX, grants for the VOTEX, because we discussed that a few weeks ago?
We did.
Maybe a month ago with Chief Silva. So that was great to see.
Yeah, that definitely is a key, and I know that there's a big advocacy going on to push. You know, when we were talking, the idea is, you know, sure, it's great to move on to higher education in a 4-year school, but you know, what's wrong with the trades? You know, right now there's a big void,
when it comes
to the trades, and what's wrong with, you know, being someone who is a carpenter, somebody who's an electrician? There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's a respectable.
And we've really been pushing that, I think, lately too. We really need it, you know. And they really come out. They don't have the debt like college students have. You know, you talk to some of these electricians that are coming out the early 20s, mid 20s, and they're buying houses now. What college student can actually buy a house after a 4-year degree or a 6-year degree?
Right, but usually these individuals who go to a trade school, who are able to, you know, learn under a journeyman. Usually they're not incurring debt because they're, you know, doing $40,000 to $80,000 per year or
and they're
X
earning
semester,
while they train. That's a big part of it. They're earning while they train.
Yeah.
On-the-job training.
On-the-job training. That's, yes.
Well, my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, Emma, is actually a co-op student. She does a co-op program at Plymouth South High School.
Yep.
And she works 3 days a week in Kingston at Crown College.
Oh.
The daycare center. And because she wants to be a teacher.
That's wonderful.
So that's her, and she gets paid for it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So it's wonderful.
I think that's a great program,
and we need
too,
to start doing
schools.
More and more of that.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah.
So what will your respective districts gain from ARPA funding? You have to be excited that there's some monies that are coming. You mentioned Votex, Rep. Lenatra. Is there anything else that you're hoping will, be shared amongst the folks in the 12th Plymouth?
Oh, we have some wonderful things for the 12th Plymouth, as well as the 1st Plymouth. That's what you are, correct?
Yes, yes.
The 1st Plymouth. Some great things.
Don't forget
that. I want
that
we were.
First.
He's the first.
He's the first.
For now. So we some great things. We for Kingston alone, there was money towards their water sewer program. The Plymouth Chamber of Commerce. Oh, gosh, so many different things. In mind, I've Halifax and Plimpton.
We got the Spire Center. We got
Spire
money for the Spire Center. The Pilgrim Hall Museum got some funding. Yeah, yeah. So, and you're looking at the list, if I can, Kevin, just kind of go through this a little bit. So under education, there's $100 million to capital grants to vocational schools, as Kathy mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
$100 million for public schools for HVAC systems, which is huge. I mean, a lot of these schools we have in the Commonwealth are old, and if you can retrofit them to have better air quality. $105 million for a variety of education supports, including recovery grants to state universities and community colleges. Then you have infrastructure money, $100 million to fund water and sewer infrastructure improvements. A lot of cities and towns could use that. $100 million for dam removals, $90 million for marine ports, $25 million for greenway gateway cities. Economic development, you have $135 million to support cultural facilities and tourism assets throughout Massachusetts.
Which is so important, especially
absolutely.
In Plymouth,
yeah.
You know, where
yeah.
we are.
Yep. $75 million grants for small businesses. You have workforce development, as I mentioned. $500 million is going to be for the premium pay for low-income essential workers. $107 million for workforce and career technical skills. So, and it goes on, $24 million for Boys and Girls Clubs and YMCAs.
And
I
they
mean,
were really,
huge.
You know, they were hit hard during the pandemic. A lot of the nonprofits were really hit hard. So this will give them a nice boost. And even our healthcare. So we have the addiction treatment. We all know that addiction even rose significantly through the pandemic. So a lot of money went into that and behavioral health services, workforce and infrastructure in the health department, healthcare. And, of course, our physically stressed hospitals were impacted. So there's some money that went there. So we're, hopefully we'll all be in, we're going to be in much better shape and get back to recovery.
And, the one that Kathy just mentioned that's near and dear to my heart is the behavioral health. And
yes.
That's huge to see that kind of money going into that. And the governor is going to be coming out with a health care bill as well in the beginning of the year. And I think the speaker is as well, which is really going to start tackling behavioral health, mental health. Really, I think for the first time in a real way that will make an impact and make a difference. We have to, in this state, start treating behavioral, mental health the same as you do physical health. And that includes the payments to doctors as well.
Yes, definitely.
And once you start doing that, you create that equity in both areas. And I believe that if you treat mental and behavioral health, the physical health side, the cost of physical health side will actually go down.
Is this particular bill that the governor is working on at this particular time, is this something that's going to work in conjunction with any federal Affordable Care Act legislation laws that are in place, or is this going to be something unto itself?
My understanding is going to be something, a combination, things that are happening on the federal level, but more so something more individualized for Massachusetts, and hopefully we'll be seen as a leader in the country with what's going to be coming out.
So is it along the lines of, I'm going to throw this out there, Romney Care, which we know that initially Massachusetts was one of the first states to come up with its own health care, and then before we know it, that federal government came up and it kind of evolved into Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. Is it going to be something like that, you think?
I'm hoping it will be, again, because we really need to tackle behavioral mental health. I think if any lessons we learned from COVID, particularly in children, is that the behavioral mental health is real, and we need to start dealing with it in a real way.
Okay, but this is just the treatment. What about as far as beds? What about as far as...
All of it. All comprehensive, yes. Good, okay. All of it, yes.
Across the board.
We need to learn to attract and retain our mental health counselors. Right. We have a shortage. We have a shortage in psychiatrists. So we need... They're schooled here, but they're not staying. So why is that? So that's a learning process to be able to attract and retain. Mm-hmm.
So definitely good to know. You know, on the last closing note, and I know we teased about the governor not seeking re-election, what are your thoughts, Rep. Muratori, on the race itself? Do you see this as a race that's yet to see some true stars? Or do you feel that we already have some of the key components that are kind of already, you know, said that they're in the race, like a Jeff Deal who was in this particular race? It's rumored that we could see Mara Healey be in this. Mm-hmm. It was teased that I believe that the Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh, was in the area today. Is that just to kind of do a little reconnaissance or just visit?
I believe he said he's not speculating on the speculation, is what he said today. That's a quote unquote. I think it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, with the way the Mass GOP is at this point, it's really dysfunctional, if I could say that word. It's so dysfunctional at this point. And I don't really see, a Republican coming out victorious in Massachusetts. I think the only hope would have been probably Charlie Baker. I just don't know of anybody else out there. Sheriff Lou out of Worcester may have been a possible candidate, but he's pulled his name out. Jeff Deals, you know, is a good guy. I worked with him in the House, and he'll be a formidable opponent. But it's going to be difficult in the Democratic state of Massachusetts for somebody like Jeff Deal to beat Amara Healey or somebody strong on the Democratic side.
Did you want to add anything? I know you had a chance to kind of weigh in last week.
We weighed on this last time. You know, right now, we'll see. Just give it a couple weeks, and we'll talk again.
I think I might have said this off air, and I don't know if I mumbled this on air. What name that we didn't mention on the Democrat side, Joe Kennedy?
That's right. You said that off air.
I thought he said he wasn't going to run.
I believe he said that as well.
I mean, he would be a dandy candidate.
Dandy candidate.
He would.
That's a good word.
I think on the Republican side too. I think Sean O'Connell was looking.
Fantastic. Her name is out there too.
Yeah, I think her name is out there. Yeah.
She'd make one heck of a governor.
Yeah. But again, it's because of the way the Mass GOP, and nothing gets Sean and nothing gets Jeff Deal.
Yeah.
But the way the party is splintered, you know, only 10% of the registered voters in Massachusetts are Republicans, you know, 35% are Democrats, and the rest are independents. And you've got to be able to get the independents to cross over in order to get a Republican to win. So we'll have to wait and see if anybody comes out.
So what we're going to do right now is we're going to step aside when we come back. We're going to talk a little bit about decommissioning of Pilgrim, redistricting, and a lot more right here on Monday Night Talk, heard on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Eager to go where the road doesn't? With the all-new 2022 Nissan Frontier, nothing's out of bounds. Climb rocks and sail through mud with available locking differentials that'll help you tackle almost any trail and dominate rugged terrain with 310 horsepower in a premium cabin with available advanced tech. In the all-new 2022 Nissan Frontier, the adventure begins where the road ends. Find your frontier. Shop NissanUSA.com today.
This financial update with CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger is sponsored by Dell Small Business. Had a bad day? Don't fret if you're playing the long game.
If you are a longer-term investor, you can look beyond these single days.
Dell Technologies end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade. Save big on computers featuring Windows 11 Pro that easily automate workflows, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back, and our mainstay for this hour, of course, the State Representative Kathy Lenastra and Matt Muratori are here. Hey, just a quick note, a thank you to our sponsors, Tiny & Sons Glass. They've been a longtime sponsor, as well as McGuigan's and the patio at McGuigan's. Quick note, if you're thinking of things to get family members and they're hard to buy for, gift cards are the best way to go. And any of the folks who actually advertise on this station are all fantastic. Pick one, you know, whether it's, you know, someone needs car repairs, I would ask you to get a gift certificate from McGuigan's or the patio. Both restaurants are phenomenal, and you can't go wrong. And I think that whoever you get that gift card for will clamor for more down the road. So keep that in mind if you are thinking for gift ideas for this holiday season, whatever your holiday is, whether it's Kwanzaa, Festivus, you name it, or Christmas. So back to the radio program. And we will leap right into talking. Let's talk a little bit about the decommissioning of Pilgrim. How is that cruising along these days?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that. I actually, on my show the other day, I did a show with Pine Dubois, who is the co-chair of the NDCAP, which is the state commission, the panel, and Patrick O'Brien, who's the communication director of Holtec. So we did a show together, and it just came out this week. And it actually really gave a good update and a progress of where we're at. I think Pilgrim's ahead of Holtec is ahead of schedule for the decommissioning. All the rods are out of the spent pool and getting into dry cast. One of the biggest issues that came up with us as legislators recently, yes, had to do with the last NDCAP meeting, which I believe was 2 weeks ago today. There was some discussion about the where the discharge of the water from the spent fuel pool is going to go into the Cape Cod Bay. And you're talking about chemicals and radioactivity in that. And I'm not sure that the Cape Cod Times article was as accurate as it probably could have been, but it did get some people upset about that. It made it seem like that the discharge was going to be happening any day. So from that show, we talked about that, and Holtec put out a statement right after that saying, no, we have no plans on doing that. There's a process that needs to happen, at least no time frame in 2022 to do it, which gives us as legislators to actually, you know, meet with DEP, who controls the chemicals controls radioactivity, you know, the chemicals, and DPH, who controls the radioactivity. And there was a memorandum of understanding with Attorney General Healey,
yes,
with Holtec over a year ago, that actually controls some of this. So we're going to be
meeting with
DEP, Attorney General, and DPH next few weeks, probably mid to late January, to see what are the next steps and how that actually works, so we have a better understanding of that.
Any ideas to the quantity of that liquid that they're going to have to deal with, either treat and then find a way to disperse?
Yeah, I don't remember how many gallons we're talking about there, but it's quite a bit. Yeah, it is. And you know, it's not something that hasn't been done over the years, but it has to be done in the right way. And the other part of this whole thing is how can you once they take down all the buildings, which is the next phase of this, you know, how can we get it to really virgin soil so that it can be used for, you know, maybe public-private partnership, you know, some development, some protected space, et cetera. So that's really going to be the next step. We're talking about 1,700 acres there.
That's a lot of land.
Yeah. Now, and the other part of it, as you know, is, Kathy, is the dry cast storage are going to be stored on site for a while, so for years and years to come. So, you know, you have to keep that aside, and then what sort of land can you use, like, around that? And it's beautiful land, as you know. It's right on the water,
it's
too.
It's absolutely stunning land. But I will say, that was, I just watched that. It was so informative and laid out so well. So I recommend anybody that's listening to look. You can look it right up on PAC TV.
Thank you.
Well, what's the timeline? I mean, as far as
They're looking to be done by 2027. I mean, that was the goal, but it sounds like it may be before that, that could be done. But that's really the goal, to be cleaned up and out by then.
And then you don't know how long. I mean, is there going to be public discussion about what to do with the land? I mean, it's going to have to be cordoned off, where nobody's allowed to go on there until it's able to.
It's cleaned up.
Yeah.
Well, Holtec owns the land, so but the town has the right of first refusal on it. So the town would like to get it if Holtec isn't going to sell it and do something. It's an asset. It's an asset to Holtec. So, and it's a pretty expensive asset. So, but you know, they've committed to actually speaking to the town about it. And about possibly buying it if they want to. But I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be a lot of money.
That would be a lot of money.
Yeah.
But again, for preservation.
Mm-hmm. Preservation, yeah.
You know,
maybe
housing.
Some development, affordable housing, yeah.
Could, but, I mean, you may not be able to put anything on that land for, what, 10, 15 years?
You'll be able to use a good portion of it in a few years.
Really?
By 2027. Yeah, yeah. It's just going to be there. There will be a certain amount you won't, because the millerims in the ground have to be at 10, which is like any place, really. 10 isn't that bad, and that was the agreement worked out with the Attorney General to get it down to 10. I think Holtec wanted it at 25 at one point, which makes it difficult to build on.
But knowing that they have a vested interest in this, and if they're able to turn this over, it's an investment,
exactly,
honestly.
Exactly right, exactly.
Yep. You know, and who knows what it'll be worth in 5 or 10 years,
exactly.
Knowing that housing is kind of a big deal these days.
Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. I just heard John Buckley on the radio today. Oh,
yeah.
Actually, it was on Christine's newscast.
Yeah, I heard that coming down.
Sales are 13% higher than they were last December, which is interesting to me, because, you know, I'm a realtor as well. So my house that I purchased last December increased 13%, which is crazy in 1 year.
Yeah, it really is. And then that's why this ARPA money, this money in for housing as well. So we really need to start getting on in developing more housing for people, and to get the prices down.
More affordable housing as well.
Yeah.
It's just
workforce housing for elders, disability, et cetera.
Now, I know one of the other items you wanted to talk about, and again, this segment is just flying by. Redistricting. How does the first Plymouth district, how will it change due to redistricting?
Well, it's very interesting. So we're going to lose Rep. Xaros, who had the southern tip of Plymouth, and he will stay over the bridge. We will miss him. I mean, he was a bright light,
full of
energy. We enjoyed working
when
with
we would
him.
Go to events, he would pull out Kathy's chair. I don't do that.
No. He would pull out.
Chivalry?
I will miss him.
Yeah, you will miss him.
All the chivalry is on the other side of the bridge.
So I will miss that. And I am fortunate to retain my district in Plymouth and add a little bit to it. And I will lose Duxbury, but I will gain a little piece of Pembroke.
Interesting.
Mm.
Yes, and I think this is the first time in probably some couple of decades where Plymouth will only have two representatives.
Yes.
Instead of three.
But you're not, like, gaining a part of another town?
Yeah, no. I'm actually gaining Rep. Xaros' district, Precinct 9 in Plymouth. And I think I gained one of yours. I think it's Precinct 11 or 13, I think.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, one of them.
I think it's 11.
I think it's Federal
Airport.
Foreigners. Oh, is it the airport 13?
Oh, my gosh.
I forget which one. But, yeah, I'll gain one of those as well. So I'll gain a couple of precincts. And then Plymouth is adding three precincts as well. So Plymouth is going from 15 precincts to 18 precincts. So Kathy will have four of those or five of those?
Five of those.
Five of those, and I'll have the other 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so but you'll still be solely Plymouth.
Solely Plymouth, yeah.
I know.
Keep the record intact. I don't know how that happened.
It's not a bad thing, though.
No, it isn't. I mean,
I think it's a great thing.
We represent, 44,000 people, give or take. And Plymouth is the largest town in the state now. It exceeded Brookline now, so we're at 64,000 plus. And growing, still growing, too.
What interests me is Matt represented more constituents as a selectman than he does.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
As a state rep.
Yep, so true.
But I'm fortunate to work with Matt. Mm-hmm. I mean, we work so well together, mm-hmm. and there's so many things in Plymouth going on. It's exciting.
You know, and what we don't do either, we don't look at, okay, so we got a call from somebody from Plymouth and say they need something and say, okay, well, where do they live? Are they in Kathy's district? Or both of us will just, if they help. Call us, we just help.
We just help.
That's what it's about. It doesn't matter.
But it's the way it should be.
You would think, but there are some places in the state that doesn't work that way. It just, you know.
Depending on the ask and depending on the person. Some people could be a little bit more exuberant when asking for something mm-hmm. than others. And sometimes you're like going, mm-hmm.
yeah.
The person's at 11, they should be like a 6.
Yeah, exactly.
But once you talk to them, they can bring them right down to a 6, you know?
Some people, not so much.
You know, you're right, though. I think most people, when you talk to them, you know, face-to-face or you call them on the phone, it's great to put something on social media. This guy's a jerk for doing this, but, you know, I call them. If I get something negative on Facebook, I'll say, hey, Betty, do me a favor. Get me this guy's number. Let me call him. And then when you have that personal connection, you can still agree to disagree.
Correct.
But you can do it in a respectful way.
Right.
And that seems to be what we're missing, and we have to get back to that. You know, you talk about, you know, Bob Dole just passing away.
Sure.
You know, one of the last great compromises. You know, Ted Kennedy, another one.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost that in Washington, compromise.
You get an attitude these – I feel that it's a growing cultural attitude, win at all costs.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've lost empathy.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. I was thinking about the other day. I was talking to my daughter who's 16 and starting to get a little involved with what's going on in the world, right? Mm. And she used the word empathy to me, and I'm like, wow.
Mm.
I was pretty impressed, but I really thought about it. It gave me pause. Yeah, I think we're lacking a little empathy.
Yeah, but you're right. People just they have to win.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever their idea is, they have to win no matter what the cost
is. Well, I have, you know, if I'm playing softball, I have to win.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so just saying that.
Probably the last thing that we want to touch upon, is it too early to talk about budgets and the next fiscal year budget, even though we're only halfway through the 2022 budget?
Yeah, no, because the governor will have his State of the State somewhere around January 20th, 21st, something like that. So his budget will be out by then.
Yeah.
And
before Kathy, you know it, yeah, we'll be working on the budget.
And again, another fortunate situation is that Plymouth has both representatives that are on the House Ways and Means that deals with the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be getting to work pretty quickly soon after that budget comes out in hearings. And hopefully we'll be able to go across the state with the budget. I know last year because of COVID, we had to do these budgets in via Zoom, but hopefully we'll be able to get out and go across the state and actually discuss the budgets and get input. And
I'm sure you both watched the revenue numbers. How has the revenue been over the past 6 months? Any idea?
It's unbelievable. I think it's 9% over the projections at this point. Matter of fact, the opera money that was used, we didn't use, we got, I think, $5.6 billion in the opera money.
Yep.
We only used 3.87 or 8, something like that. $1.1 or $1.2 billion actually came from surplus money. Yeah, from our own budget.
We've never been in this position before. So
you
have to be wise.
Yeah.
Last question, that is are you both ready for the holidays? It's a mere what? How many days left? 12 days?
Let me text Kristen and see what she says.
Oh.
12 days of Christmas?
Is there only 12 days left?
Yeah, it's the 13th day, so my math says it's 12.
I just went through birthdays. So my daughter turned 16, which was a big deal. And my mother's birthday is tomorrow. If you're listening, happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So now I can concentrate on Christmas.
Maybe I'll get a citation. Make a note of that.
Well, no, it would be Tim Whalen.
Oh, okay.
She lives
in Dennis. They live in Dennis.
Yeah, but no, I think it's hard to believe. I think I said off air that I just got back from Florida this morning, went to the Tampa Bay game last night.
Yes.
And when you're down there for a weekend and you see the lights and all that, it just doesn't feel like Christmas down there. But then you come back here and it's cold and you start seeing it. Now it's going to start feeling like Christmas.
Yeah, it's called reality.
Yeah, so we got 12 days left. So
12 days.
Plenty of time. Plenty of time to get it done.
What are you hoping for this holiday season?
Oh, that's a you question.
Yeah.
When I was on your show, he would ask a question like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, for folks to be able to get together this year more so, as families or as friends, You know, we missed all that last year.
We did.
And we're hoping people can do that and do it safely. We do expect the COVID numbers will rise. They've risen since Thanksgiving. They'll probably rise after Christmas as well, but then we'll settle it out. But hopefully people can get together. And, you know, it's all about family. It's all about, you know, love and respecting one another and enjoying each other's company. And hopefully we'll do that.
Do you think the days of state of emergency, like we had to endure March of 2020, are over, or is there a chance that we could?
I'm afraid to even put that out there.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think we'll see.
I hate to ask it.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see a state emergency. I don't think we'll see us go back to shutdowns at all either. I think we're beyond that at this point. You know, what we do have to be careful of is the hospitalizations. That's really the key number to be looking at.
Overwhelming those institutions.
Yeah. And, we're up to about 1,100, almost 1,200 hospitalizations now. At the height of it, we're at 4,000. You know, so we're almost, you know, a third of the way there. So we really have to keep an eye on the hospitalizations.
Yeah.
Anything you, either of you want to say in closing, Kathy?
Well, I would just like to say happy holidays and happy new year. I might be on before the new year, but if I'm
I'm sure you will, yeah. Should be on three more times before the end of the year, folks. Don't worry about it.
And I would like to thank Matt. I mean, he's just, you know, thank you for inviting me on the show. It's a pleasure, and it's a pleasure working with you.
Same here. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the energy you bring and the passion you bring, you know, to the people of your district, and particularly for Plymouth. So
same
really
here. Even though you don't pull out my chair.
Yeah.
And
I will.
And stay tuned for their soon-to-be-formed podcast.
We'll have to think of a name.
Yeah, we can think of a name on that. Yeah, yeah.
But in the meantime, you can watch Profiles with Kathy Lenatra on PAC TV.
Without Matt Muratori.
He'll be on.
But you should tell PAC TV to share it on Mass Media Exchange so that other access centers from the Commonwealth could watch it like they do with
State Matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind.
I will keep that in mind.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays
to you.
Thank you.
And we are going to step aside. When we come back, hour number two, we'll kick it off with Alex Bezanson. He's got something to say, and you might want to hear it.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AABoston.org.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Coming up later this hour, attorney Adam Bond will be joining us, and we'll chat with him in regards to an issue that he uncovered with Amazon. But right now, joining us is a gentleman who is a reoccurring guest, has co-hosted from time to time. He is an Abington selectman, and it was previously serving as the, I believe, the chairperson for the Plymouth County Democratic League. Alex Bezanson joins us. Sir, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. Always great to be here with you on Monday Night Talk.
How goes the battle?
The battle goes well. I recently stepped down as chair of Plymouth County Democratic League, and we had an election, and a great guy named George O'Toole has been elected chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League. He comes from South Boston originally, and a transplant like many others to the South Shore. He actually lives in Abington, and he's worked on many, many, many campaigns. And we recently had an event where I technically handed the gavel over to him. We held it at McGuigan's last week, and we had a great crowd there. Surprisingly, we had such a good crowd. We had members from Wareham, Middleborough, and all over Plymouth County. So speaking of Plymouth County, I'd like to make an announcement tonight, if I may.
Really? Should I get a drum roll out and ready? Or
yeah, please do. No.
What is your announcement, sir?
Well, my wife Lisa and I have been thinking about this since last summer. Okay. And last week, we filed with the Office of Campaign and Political Finance to run for Plymouth County Commissioner in 2022. I've reestablished my campaign people, and we're going to go full bore.
You know, it makes me ask, when I interview folks who are seeking this said office, I think the one thing I think a lot of residents ask is, what is it? Or hopefully that has changed in recent years and will continue to change. What is it that Plymouth County commissioners do?
Well, one of the big things that they did, and a lot of people know in the last 18 months, is they authorized Tom O'Brien in the Treasury Department to handle the Federal CARES Act and now the ARPA money. And a lot of people were against this, actually including my opponent in the Democratic primary. I endorsed it from day one because I know Tom O'Brien, I know what he can do, and I thought it was the right thing for the county. And as it turned out, it was. They did a tremendous job distributing the CARES Act, and now they'll be working on the ARPA. There are towns, for Abington, for example, I think it was Northborough they compared to Abington, and Abington has already gotten about $2.3 million from the CARES Act, where a similar town that the money was distributed by the state got about half that. So during the pandemic, the towns needed this money immediately. We spent millions of dollars on things that we never anticipated spending. And to have the CARES Act there distributed by the Plymouth County Treasurer was the right thing to do. I think a lot of people don't know what the county does, but you know, that's going to be part of my mission, is to you know, reach out to all the 27 communities and educate them on what the county government does and what we can do for them.
So again, if folks are just tuning in, we have Alex Bazanson. Alex has been a regular guest, and he is currently serving on the Board of Selectmen in the town of Abington. And he has announced that he is a candidate for county commissioner. He's a Democratic candidate who will be part of the primary. Is there a primary, depending on how many candidates get in on this race?
I believe since there's only one seat open, and I'm not positive, but it's my understanding that since there's only one seat open, there will be one Democrat and one Republican, so there will be a primary.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure I would check, and knowing that you have a little bit of parliamentarian in your blood, that you would probably know the answer to it.
Well, I think the way the seats are, there's three county commissioners.
Right.
I believe one is up for re-election in the gubernatorial year, and two are up for re-election in the presidential year.
Okay.
So Sandra Wright is the incumbent that would be up for re-election this year in 2022.
Oh, okay. Very good. Good to know.
And of course, the other one is Jared Valenzuela, who is serving on the board. He was newly elected just a little over.
Yes, him and Greg Hanley were elected in the presidential year, so they serve until the next presidential year.
Okay. So, I guess the first thing I have to ask is what do you feel is going to set you apart from any other candidate that will enter this race?
Well, I think my past municipal experience speaks for itself. I think I have more municipal experience than my Democratic opponent, and I believe I probably have more municipal experience than the incumbent county commissioner. I served 23 years on the Abington Conservation Commission, 15 of those years as chairman. I served 2 years as an elected water commissioner in Abington, and that's a joint water works between Abington and Rockland. While I was on the water commission, I proposed and we accepted to waive all the connection fees for senior housing, low-income housing, and veteran housing. The amount of money that the developer would have to pay is outrageous, especially when they're doing housing for those people. I'm in my fourth year as selectman in Abington. I served from 2015 to 2018. I was reelected again in 2020. I did not seek re-election in 2018, as you and many know that I had run for state representative at that time. I wasn't successful, but I will say publicly, I'm very happy with the state representative that we do have. She's doing a great job. So then I decided to run for re-election in 2020, and I was successful. When I was on the select board in 2015 to 2018, I was the appointed member of the Plymouth County Advisory Board, and I am again for the town of Abington. And I am also one of the five members of the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. So for people that don't know, there are 27 communities in Plymouth County, 26 towns and the city of Brockton, and each one appoints one person as their liaison to the Plymouth County Advisory Board. And it's a selectman or a councilman, depending on the type of government. And in Brockton, it's one of the councilors. And then that board of 27 members elects the executive board, which I am one of those five. So I have tremendous experience in municipal government and county government. I know how it works. And I think I would be a great choice to serve there.
I would ask you, and that is besides the CARES Act funding, distributing that, and the ongoing work for the American Rescue Plan Act funds, both from the federal government, what else would you like to see the county engage and do as an assistance to its membership in Plymouth County?
Well, I'd like to see more towns, including Abington, get into the Mayflower Health Plan. Abington made a huge mistake in 2018 by dropping out of that. I was on the board when the selectmen voted 4-1 to get out of Plymouth, out of the Mayflower, and it was a big mistake. We're looking to get back into it now, but it's not just as easy as saying, okay, we want to sign up. It cost the town of Abington a lot of money doing that. And there was some people going around with false information and convinced people to pull out. I think that's a great thing for the communities. I think the procurement program they have, you know, collaborative buying for all the towns. I don't think the towns are taking advantage of that. I'd like to expand on that. They currently can buy police cars or road salt and some other thing, but we should be able to buy almost everything the town needs through Plymouth County with that 27 community buying power. And, you know, just for the listeners, it amounts to about, well, first of all, Plymouth County gets their funding through the tax stamps. And it's a very small amount. The state keeps taking more and more away, and we need to fight to get more of that back. But also, each community is assessed a fee to be part of the Plymouth County government. And it actually amounts to just under $3 per person. So if you look at it that way, we're getting tremendous support from the county for less than $3 a person per year. So I think we need to expand on some of the programs that they currently have. I think we need to expand the programs that are available to the towns and educate the town selectmen and city council on what we can do and ask them what else we can do for them. The procurement is a big thing. I think more regionalization of certain, you know, jobs would help. You know, someone I was talking to the other day even mentioned maybe a Plymouth County health care facility or and these are just ideas that have been presented to me in the short time that I've announced that I'm running. But the health care and maybe an HR department to help smaller towns like Abington that doesn't have HR, you know, and Whitman and other towns. And that would be the source to screen applicants and, you know, give them the benefit books and everything, and then give the town manager or the selectman, you know, two or three applicants. So it's just a couple of ideas that might save the town's money. I know Abington is looking to hire an HR person, which is probably going to be $70,000 to $90,000 a year. And if we could do that on a regional basis, it makes more sense. So those are some of the things that, you know, we want to explore. And I just think that county government can be a lot more. And I think it can help the towns, but the towns just need to know what it can do for them.
Interesting enough, and I know that it's something that agitates a few current members who are on the Plymouth County Commission, is when we're coming to that time of year, probably about 4 or 5 months from now, when we'll start holding, WATD will start holding political forums. And one of the favorites questions asked during the lightning round by one of my colleagues, Christine James, is Plymouth County government. Keep it or get rid of it. Well, this is your opportunity to weigh in on said such a question.
Well, I think we definitely need to keep it just for some of the reasons I've mentioned in the last few minutes.
Sure.
I don't know if I want the state taking over all the courthouses. I don't know if I want the state taking over our registry of deeds or our registry of probate. I mean, we have some great, couple of great people running those. And I think that should stay within the county. John Buckley, our register of deeds, has done a tremendous job since he's been in there upgrading and improving the programs down there. And, you know, building the room to save all the old documents and everything like that. I'd hate to see that be in the state's hands. And the registry of probate, Matt McDonough, another great leader that we have. He knows Plymouth County. He knows the people in Plymouth County. The attorneys that work there know the people of Plymouth County. We need to keep it that way. We don't need attorneys from the western part of the state coming in here and trying to help when we have qualified people to do it here. We need to keep the county government here.
I want to say over the past, I'd say 7 to 10 years, maybe a little bit longer, maybe past 12, 13 years, the county commissioners on a regular basis back in the day would make headlines or would be news stories that would air on this radio program, on this radio station, because of
the contentious meetings that they would hold, and you would have member versus member, and there would always be some kind of a, you know, entertaining sound bites between, you know, bickering back and forth between commissioners. That has settled down over the years, and it seems as though that there's more of a collaborative effort for commissioners to work together and to get things done. Is that something that you would strive to continue? And that is to, while they may, there's a collection of Democrats and Republicans, there's three of you, and that you know, that the different party affiliations that you are tied to will change from time to time. But how important is it to have a good working relationship on the commission?
Well, once you're elected to any of these boards, you need to put aside political differences. And I've done that throughout my career in municipal government. When I was on the board of Selectmen in 2015 to 2018, I believe at that time I was the only Democrat on the board. And I worked very well with at least one of the Republicans on the board. We got a lot done. We got the dog park, helped get the dog park established and fully funded from a grant, no taxpayer money. I started the Abington Substance Awareness Coalition back then when I was on the board with the full support of all the members of the board. And I'm on the Board of Selectmen now, and I'm on with four Republicans. And we've done more in the last year that I've been on than I've seen any board do in many, many years. But that's in large part to the great town manager that they actually hired right before I was on the board. So I think you need to put that aside. And I think the county commissioners, for the most part, have done that. Dan Pilato was a great asset to the Plymouth County Commission. And I think Jared Valenzuela, he's, you know, stepped in right when the pandemic hit. And I think he's done a good job so far.
How about as far as legislatively? I know that there's long been concerns that the state takes a lot of the county's revenue and doesn't necessarily give back it the fair share of the monies that are rightfully collected by the county.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was going to fight for if I had been elected state representative. And I not taking anything away from our rep and senators now in the area, but you know, I think that's something they need to look at. When the state took over the sheriff's department, basically they took more money away from us. So, you know, we do rent our courthouses. We own the courthouses and the DA's office and some other properties and stuff. But the state keeps whittling away at the revenue that we're collecting. That's collected in Plymouth County, and the majority of it should be staying in Plymouth County.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Alex Bezanson, who is a member of the Abington Select Board and has announced that he is throwing his hat in the ring to be one of your next county commissioners in 2022 and beyond. A quick side note. Next year is going to be quite an election year. Not only the Plymouth County Commissioner's race, but the recent announcement of Charlie Baker deciding that he's not going to run for a third term, and Karen Polito deciding that she's not going to step in and be a candidate for said office. Give your thoughts on how an exciting year it's going to be for state politics.
I think it's going to be really exciting. I think the Democratic Convention is going to be a great time this year. I fully expect Mara Healey will jump in. I don't have any proof of that, but that's just my feeling from talking to people. And my guess it will be Mara Healey against Jeff Giel. And I think that'll be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to play out. But I think Mara Healey's done a great job as Attorney General. And she's got a lot of money in the bank. And I think she's probably going to do well. I think she'll get the Democratic nomination. I'm not sure how much opposition Jeff Deal will have in the Republican primary. But it's my guess it'll be Laura Healey and Jeff Deal.
It's been teased, and I don't know how it's being teased, seeing that he was just nominated for Secretary of Labor on the federal level, but that Marty Walsh might want to take a flyer on possibly running for governor. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know for a fact, but my guess would be that him and Mara have probably had this discussion, and I would not expect both of them to run.
Okay. Definitely something to keep in mind. Probably the other thing that would be interesting is in this state, isn't there a difference as to how the Republicans go about the process of lieutenant governor compared to the Democrats?
I think the Democrats, anyone can run for lieutenant governor. And I think with the Republicans, I think it's more like the presidential and the vice president they would pick. And I've heard rumors as to who Jeff Deal might pick, but that's not for me to say.
Okay. How about, I mean, who, if Mara Healey does jump in, who makes a good lieutenant governor candidate? You know, have you heard any rumblings? Again, I know you usually have your finger on the pulse of what's going on politically, especially on the Democratic side.
I haven't heard anyone jumping in. But I would, you know, I have Ben Downing, it is. I get him mixed up with our friend in East Bridgewater sometimes. I think he would be, he'd be a great governor. I just don't think he has the name recognition or the money to succeed. But I would like to see him as a possible lieutenant governor candidate.
Probably final question in this area. Were you surprised to hear that Charlie was not going to seek a third term?
Honestly, I was not surprised. And I'm sorry I missed your show last Monday night to discuss this, but I had had my booster and I wasn't quite feeling up to par. And thank you, Kathy Lenatra, for last minute stepping in. But what I would have said last Monday night is that I honestly think that Baker might have had a tough time in the primary against Jeff Deal. Okay. I think in the general election, I think Charlie Baker would have done very well because he would have drawn from both sides. But in a Republican primary, I wouldn't rule out Jeff Deal in that situation.
So as we wrap up, I want to give you a final opportunity to engage with folks. If folks want to, they're tuning in, they've listened to this segment, they've heard you announce that you're a candidate. If there are folks out there who want to get involved with your campaign, whether it's as a volunteer, financially, or just want to find out more, how can they do all of the above?
Well, we will have a Facebook page up if it's not already. Like I said earlier, I reestablished my campaign staff, and they're working on the website, which is alexbazanson.org. That was we still own that, but we have to revamp that, and I'm not sure that's going to be up by tonight or tomorrow. My Facebook page, I'm on Facebook, and you can reach me at alexbazanson@yahoo.com. My cell phone number is 781-953-1236, and we will be having a kickoff event at Tinray's in Brockton on January 13th. So hopefully everyone can come out and have some great pizza and meet me and meet my staff at Tinray's on January 13th.
That's right, the original pizza boy. We should have, you know, thrown that out there, and seeing that you actually have done an episode of Pizza Boys, it's the world famous Pizza Boys TV show. That's a great venue to meet up with you.
It is, and we recently aired the latest episode of Pizza Boy at Cape Cod Cafe in Brockton.
The legendary Cape Cod Cafe, the home supposedly of
Bar Pizza.
Yeah, very, very good pizza.
Well, Alex,
Brooklyn has a lot of great pizza places. I know we're not talking pizza boys, but I'll probably be going around to most of them. Now I have more than one excuse to go visit them.
There he is, Alex Bazantin, our guest for this episode. And I'm sure we'll be having you on the program, whether it's to talk more about the campaign or just to whatever's going on in and around the South Shore. So, again, best of luck on the campaign kickoff, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
We're going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we return, the final segment of Monday Night Talk, right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck! Snap back or rock! Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, go to AA.org. To find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AABoston.org.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We have arrived at the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And usually you should do your best to save the best for last. Joining us is an all-star attorney, the lawyer himself. I call him the lawyer of Monday Night Talk from time to time, because when he comes on, he really can state a case, or at least defend a case. Today, he's actually here, Adam Bond, to talk a little bit about his findings through his own personal experience with an organization we all know that we use from time to time. That's right, Amazon. Adam, how are you, sir? Hey.
How are you? I appreciate the flattery. It will get you everywhere.
Okay.
So you keep that in mind. It may even get you some free legal work. But remember, you get what you pay for.
That is so, but, that's so very true.
Amazon has made it on my radar, not only because it is a multinational, massive corporation, but because some of the things that it does have great effect on all of our lives, and it's a shame that it can't be more responsible.
Let's kind of build this scenario up, because it was just a couple of weeks ago that I got a call from an outraged Adam Bond, outraged because you were attempting to make a purchase, and you uncovered something that most of us, that some of us may not have encountered just yet, but depending on where you live, it could have an effect on you. If you're trying to make a purchase, you have to go through a third party credit organization like Telecheck.
Well, let me try it this way, because you like to have background on this. And
yes, I do.
And what bothers me about this is that all of what I'm telling you now comes from personal conversations with the people at Amazon.
Right.
So these are conversations I have personal knowledge of. This is what I was told. The accuracy of it, I don't know. That depends on how good the people are trained by Amazon who employs them. Putting that aside, I go out, and for the last, I don't know, I'm like everybody else. For the last 4 or 5 years, I've been using Amazon probably more often than brick and mortar. Because it's easy. I don't have to get up off my fat rear end and go out and find it. I can actually sit on my fat rear end, eat bonbons, and order online. And what I've been doing is I got tired at some point of using credit cards because I don't like the interest rates and things like that. And you got to remember, you got to remember that you're paying it off at the end of a month and all that. Forget the discipline. What I did was I tied it to my bank account. So for the last 3-4 years, everything that I've done has simply come out of the bank account, the same bank account. And it's a bank account with a very decent balance in it. No issues with that. And I have a credit score that approaches 800. So I don't have a bad credit. And I've been doing this for 3 years. No question about that. I could show that by record. So a few weeks ago, I finally decided I was going to go out there and spend $1,000 on a phone. Because I had a iPhone 8 Plus that I inherited from my daughter. And I figured, let me get a phone. So I finally see it. Amazon's got a great deal for Black Friday. Or some kind of Black Friday deal. And it's like $300 or $400 off. So I go and I order it and I tie it to the bank account. That's the payment I use. And about 15 minutes later, I get something that comes up that says payment declined. And payment declined. I didn't use a credit card. So rather than start out by calling Amazon and have them tell me, talk to my bank, I have a very shall we say, direct relationship with my bank from all the things I pointed out to them that they do that are illegal. So I called up the manager of the bank and had her check. And she said, there's nothing wrong with the account. We're not declining anything. No one's made a request for anything. We're not declining anything. If somebody asks to pay it, we'll pay it out like we've done for the last 3 years. She said, okay. So I call Amazon. And Amazon says, oh, yeah, sir. It's because of they started off by saying your bank is declining it. And I said, don't give me that. I just talked to my bank. I talked to the bank manager and they said they're not declining anything. So the Amazon person then says to me, oh, well, what it is because the number is uncharacteristically high that you're charging to the bank account. So this is for your protection. Ah, okay. And I said, oh, well, thank you for protecting me. And I was serious when I said, thank you for protecting me. I want to make the transaction. All right, well, let me do some stuff over here on this end. And then within 24 to 48 hours, go and try it again. I said, that's not satisfactory. And she said, why? And I said, you guys going to pay me the $200 or $300 that I'm losing by doing that? Because this is a deal and it's offered by Amazon and you guys could make it right for me. Oh, we'll make a note in the file. I said a note in the file and agreeing to pay it are two different things. So we got off on that fight for a few minutes. Whatever. I put the phone down and I waited 24 hours and I tried it again. Declined. What do you mean? I call up Amazon again. I go, what do you mean it's declined? And they say, well, your bank is declining. I said, no, it's not. My bank is not declining it. I talked to my bank. This is on your end. Oh, well, hold on. And she then goes back through the thing about the credit history, not the credit history, about the amount. And I said, that's crap. And I said, if you want to verify, I'm here. What do you want to know to verify the account? I've been doing this for 3 years. And then finally, I looked closely at the email that I got from them. And I see Telecheck on there. And me being a lawyer, I don't ask a question I don't know the answer to already. And I say to the woman on the other line, who is now a supervisor at this point, I said, are you guys using Telecheck? No, we are not. It's your bank. I said, excuse me? I said, your email says Telecheck. Are you using Telecheck? She goes, yes, we are. I go, okay. And then said to her, I said, all right, so if I understand correctly, you've got a Canadian corporation, footnote, Telecheck is a Canadian corporation, not an American corporation. You've got Telecheck telling you whether I can spend money with you or not, whether the amount of money is too much or too little, or whether the risk is too much. Well, you'll have to take that up with Telecheck. I said, no, I take it up with you. You're the ones who use Telecheck. I said, if I understand correctly, you're telling me that Telecheck is saying I'm too much of a risk. And she said, yes, you'll have to take it up with them. And I said, okay. So if I understand correctly, if I was using a zip code that wasn't Middleboro, where the household income is $59,000 a year, and I was using Plymouth, I might get a different answer on my on this transaction. She said, yes. And I said, okay, so if I was in West Roxbury, I probably could only afford to buy one sneaker. And she said, sir, you either put it on a credit card or you don't do the transaction. And she hung up. So I looked into Telecheck. And then I remembered that a few years ago, a woman came into me and she was all upset because she was being denied the right to write a check in a grocery store because of the fact that Telecheck was saying she couldn't write the check. She called up Telecheck and they said, well, 15 years ago, you bounced a check. And she wanted me to sue them. My wife, we now remember, you know, you start going back in your memory. My wife, one Christmas, had written four checks in one day. Think about that. During Christmas period, writing four checks in one day, just as Christmas is coming. Unheard of, obviously. Just absolutely unheard of. So she went to the third place. And the third place said, you can't write a check. And she said, why? And she said, they said Telecheck. And she looked into it, and Telecheck had decided she had a limit on the number of checks she could write in a day. They imposed this limit based on whatever they believe the risk is. So I read about Telecheck, and Telecheck has no access to any of your financial information. It's whatever they can find about you on the internet. That's it. That's what they have. And they keep a dossier on everyone, and you can actually find out about it. And they make a determination as to whether or not you can write checks, how many transactions you can do in a day, the limits on the amount you can have coming out of your bank account. That's outrageous. It is a shadow credit agency, not subject to any of the credit agency laws of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
And if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with Adam Bond, all-star attorney, a ranting maniac at this moment, but yet telling you a story because I feel it's the evolution of corporate America and the financial institutes as though they're all tied in together somehow here. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds as though maybe they have deals with some of the other financial organizations like Chase or MasterCard or Visa, whoever they may be, knowing that they would prefer, instead of getting the money directly, if there's a way to have it put on credit cards where there are fees being charged, people are making money. Those organizations, corporate America is making money. But if it's straight out of a bank, you're not making money.
You hit on something as usual. You are right. Because guess what credit card I use if I don't use the bank account?
Tell me.
My Amazon Chase.
There you go.
It's an Amazon Chase account.
Right.
But what's happening is Amazon is sitting there saying it's not our fault. Of course it is. You hired these people to sit there and basically redline areas. I mean, get this through your mind, people. You're sitting there dealing with Amazon redlining. We don't like it when banks redline. I mean, okay, let's be blunt. If you're black and you live in a poor neighborhood, Amazon is going to allow Telecheck to say, you need to put it on a credit card and pay interest on it or do whatever it is they're going to do so somebody gets a fee from a credit card company. If you're white and you live on Beacon Hill, spend away out of your bank account. We don't care. So the people in your listening area need to be very, I mean, like I said, and I think don't know if I said it here. I've got almost an 800 credit score. That's a wonderful credit score because I think the highest you can get is what, 850?
Yep.
I have more than enough money in the bank to cover this stuff.
Yep.
I don't pay my bills late. I pay them on time. I pay my balances on time. I pay my utilities on time. But because I use the Middleboro address, which is where my office is, because I use the Middleboro address, some Canadian company goes out there. And yes, I do say Canadian company with the stain. But some Canadian company is out there sitting there saying, well, Mr. Bond, you can't use your bank account. Put it on a credit card. They kept telling me, put it on a credit card. And I said, I don't want to. Who are you to tell me what to put it on? It's like when you go into banks and they tell you they don't want your coin change. Why? It's coin of the realm. Take it. So, I mean, this to me has issues of discrimination, exploitation. It's got a fraud underlying it because their people are telling, Amazon's people are telling me it's the bank. Who are you to lie to me? At least be upfront. And, you know, Amazon is out there, you know, is out there, and they've essentially created a monopoly. And the monopoly is that, as a general matter, I mean, because I've been lately, I have not been using Amazon. I've been boycotting Amazon. And what I'm doing is I'm going directly to the sites of the people that I want to buy the stuff from. To heck with Amazon at that point. But I do have to use Amazon for some things. For example, I need paper for my office. I'm not going to go out to Staples at 57 years of age and go, you know, hump, 50-pound boxes of paper when I could have Amazon deliver it to my door. So, I mean, that's the issue that I see here.
If you drilled down, and knowing that Amazon is such a large company, and a lot of times they acquire, it's like Facebook acquiring WhatsApp or Instagram, right? Is there a possibility that Telecheck is a subsidiary of Amazon and folks don't know it? And that's their way of, because not many people are going to do what you did and question. A lot of people go, oh, well, maybe I'll have to, you know, they won't go that far and go, what are you talking about?
Well, they should. I mean, that's what I'm, I mean, let me be blunt here. I'm fishing for people who want to be part of a class action. That's part of what I'm talking about when in getting on your show. Right. I'd love to find a handful of people who this has happened to and put together a class action lawsuit, not only against Telecheck, but also against Amazon. Because Amazon is co-conspiring to basically economically discriminate against people. I mean, you know, everybody's running around, BLM is running around screaming about the police and other groups, Hispanic groups. And the other day I saw downtown in Boston, Ethiopian groups screaming about all kinds of different types of discrimination. Corporate America is one of the worst discriminators. They emphasize, they catalyze, and they make worse the economic disparities among people. They exploit those economic disparities. Think about this. Poor people have to put it on a credit card and pay interest of 30%, of which the banks don't give you back anything.
Well, it's, you know what it's called, Adam. You know what those fees are actually called, right? At least they were in the day, and it was a crime. It was called loan sharking. But
sure, but you know, you had the Obama administration go out there and take all these regional local banks and bring them within the federal rules to pull them all out of the usury laws, right, which absolutely stunned me when that happened. So even though you're a local bank in Massachusetts with only Massachusetts branches, you're not subject to the 18% usury because Obama's administration said you don't have to be. You're under the federal laws. And you know, they put Whitey Bulger in jail for that crap, mostly because of his collection methodology. But they put him away for usury, but they won't put Bank of America away for charging 30% and giving you back 0.5% on the money they use of yours to lend it out.
But could a class action suit actually right the wrong, or is it just a matter of them going, okay, we did something wrong, and knowing that they have, you know, endless amounts of capital that they can just say, okay, here, we'll give you this to just to kind of sweep you under the rug. What could be done on a higher level to make this wrong, to make it corrected?
Well, go do some research, and you'll see that Telecheck has been the subject of at least one class action lawsuit. I think they settled for $3.4 million. I wouldn't have done that, but then again, I don't know what the underlying facts of the case were. Two, I don't give a hoot about how much money Amazon has with regard to a class action lawsuit. My view at the moment is there are a number of damages here. One is, how many people turned around and put it on a credit card? What are the interest rates that damaged them for doing that? What are you going to do now to make sure that the economic exploitation and discrimination that you've done against minority people or people in certain zip codes doesn't happen again. What are you going to do to change your practices and pay? I mean, my view is the only way you hurt corporate America is by making them pay. And get rid of Telecheck, because people like Telecheck, companies like Telecheck, need to be regulated. And they need to be regulated in a way that's not, I mean, look, I sat there and I thought to myself, you know, what are they doing? I think they are interfering with prospective economic relations with me. They're slandering me. They're doing a number of different things. But really what it is when it comes down to it, the vendor, which is Amazon, the vendor has decided to employ them as a methodology by which they accept or reject your business. That's what they've done. And by doing that, they've basically said poor people don't have the same access to Amazon that rich people do.
But I have to ask you, though, could anything be done to Telecheck, knowing that they are technically, they're not a domestic company, they're a foreign company?
Of course, there's a number of things you can do to foreign companies like that. I mean, I'm less concerned about the enforcement mechanism or the, you know, 50-pound hammer you bring down on their head. The courts and politicians are very clever about that. But, you know, one of the things that bothers me is this thing that Elizabeth Warren has. The Consumer Fraud Bureau, whatever the heck that is. I had a big problem with them with a bank. What was going on during COVID, that a big bank, and I laid it out for them, that a big bank was actually defrauding people with the loan forgiveness for 3 months. And I sent something off to them, and they transmitted that letter off to the bank. The bank wrote a response that was filled with lies. I then took the time and wrote a letter back, as you know I would, showing all the lies. And I get a call back from them that says, please stop sending us letters. I said, wait, aren't you guys going to do something? No, no, no. All we do is facilitate the communication. And, you know, it's a letter and a response, and that's it. That's all we do. And so people have been telling me, call Elizabeth Warren's office. Why? I mean, it's coming down to, you can't get your politicians to do squat. You need to get up there and you need to file a claim, and you need to make sure that these people are sitting there having to defend lawsuits. Yes, they have a lot of money, but all of this is bad publicity. So between people like you, Kevin, that bring this to the forefront, and lawsuits that bring it to the forefront of the political community, I mean, you know, I challenge you, Kevin, to call in one of our state legislators or to call in one of our congresspeople and say to them, this is what's going on. Are you aware of it? What are you going to do about the fact that you have a major international corporation sitting in your midst committing acts of discrimination against people based on their zip codes, which is going to align with their races? You in liberal Massachusetts that believe all people are created equal, what are you going to do to equalize this? Or do I rant too much?
No, but the thing is that I think a lot of times it will be a question of who will have jurisdiction over doing such things. Can a law that is crafted, you know, a bill that's turned into a law, have teeth to be able to prevent issues like this, or is it something that has to be done on the federal level?
Well, do you know the funny thing is, the people that would know that answer are precisely the people that will refuse to give it to you. That would be like Markey. That would be like Warren. That would be like anyone in the Baker administration who deals with the economics. And the problem that you're going to get is Amazon has purchased a whole lot of people in this world one way or the other. I don't mean they give them brown paper bags full of money. That's not what happens. Everybody who thinks that, I mean, quite frankly, is a little bit insane. They buy them in different ways. They have influence and they have power. And therefore, you don't want to cross Amazon because their commercials or the way they deal with social media may not make you look so good. But at the end of the day, if these people truly are in the ballpark of wanting to help stop that type of exploitation, to do things that diminish the impacts of income inequality, because, you know, one of the things people forget is most coups and most revolutions and the demise of most civilizations like Rome began with unrest and economic disparity, economic inequality. We're getting there quickly. And if we allow companies like this to exploit it or to exacerbate it, we're leading to our own decline. And I'm not screaming on the mountaintop, the floods are coming, get into my ark. I'm just talking about pure reality here. You've got a mega, mega corporation out there who could really give a rat's behind about how they deal with anything until somebody makes them give a darn about it. Take a look at simply around Middleborough and Lakeville area. Poor areas. They're putting in million square foot warehouses for Amazon, gumming up the traffic. But the local governments are so hungry for money that they're just letting them in. To heck with the traffic. We've got two of them in Plymouth because it's Amazon. If someone says Amazon's coming, everybody lathers up around the mouth and goes, ooh, money. Well, now take a look at what they're doing negatively. And I think if the governmental officials took a look at it, they tilted at them like they do, everybody does with windmills. I think they'd probably change because I'm not sure they're aware of the impact.
And if you're just tuning in, we were just a couple of minutes before we wrap up the show. Adam Bond has been our guest talking a little bit about Amazon and the underlying issue of what they're doing to you and deciding using a third party organization, a foreign entity like Telecheck, to decide whether or not you could pay with a check or if you have to pay with a credit card. Adam, we just got a couple of minutes left here. That gives you an opportunity. You got 3 or 4 minutes to gather the masses. If there are folks out there, how can they reach out to you? How can they talk to you? Or if they want to mobilize, what's the best way you think it should be done?
Well, first of all, if anybody wants to get a hold of me with regard to this, or anybody wants to try and become a part of some kind of a lawsuit here, I'm more than happy to talk to them at 508-946-1165. It's the office phone number. I'm in Middleborough. I'm easily approachable. I will frequently be answering my own phone. The other is, if they want, they can email me at abond@adambondlaw.com. My suggestion to people is that, if you typically use a bank account and you've been told, no, the bank is blocking it, call your bank, find out. Do your own research, at least to that degree, and see whether or not Telecheck is involved. If it's Telecheck, reach out to me, and maybe what we do is we get a group of people together to write a letter to Elizabeth Warren, to Markey, to Baker, to somebody, because I think this is probably the most obvious abuse of position for corporate America that I've ever seen. It's outrageous. And it's not just because it affects me. I'm sitting there thinking about people that are being forced into credit card transactions that don't want to be. It's just really dirty. And I think it's beneath Amazon to do this. They don't need to. They've got a good product. Why turn it darker and evil? Just keep doing what you were doing and allow everybody equal access to it. And if somebody isn't paying their bills, block them.
Is it possible? Is it possible that there has been a change in leadership or in the administration of Amazon, and that they're going a different way, and that's what the problem is?
I think it's somebody at the top has had a cranial infarction, but that's just my view. I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
But in any event, I think that's a good question. I don't really care. I'm looking at the effect, the impact of it, and what the thing is that's there. I really could give a rat's behind as to what the genesis or ideology of it was. Yeah. Who cares? You guys are doing something bad. Stop it. And for me, I'm going to continue to limit as best I can the transactions that I do with them, because quite frankly, at this point, I think that that Amazon may be approaching Sherman antitrust violations or Clayton Act violations under the antitrust laws. And that's what I'm looking at now.
Well, we'll have you back on for an update. That's all the time that we have. I thank you so much for sharing this.
OK. And as I said, yes, I could talk about it for a half hour.
Yes. Without even trying. But we'll have to have you back on. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. And fear not, we'll be back next week at the same time on the same channel right here at 6:15 p.m. next week on 95.9 WATD. You have been tuned into
Monday Night Talk.